everybody. Joe Vitale here with another Hypnotic Gold interview. And I'm very excited because I only do these interviews when I find somebody that inspires me, somebody that's making a difference in my life as well as other people's lives. And I start soaking up everything by and about them, and then at some point I go, I want to interview that person. So that's why it's an exciting moment for me, and it will be for you too, because this is something that's deeply going to influence your life. So first of all, I'm interviewing Frankie Ferez, and Frankie, are you on the line?
I'm on the line. I'm right here, Joe.
All right. Excellent. Thank you. Well, Frankie didn't create anything. He discovered something, something as old as us, something that changes everything. It's often quipped that babies don't come with an owner's manual, that we don't come with an owner's manual, period. And we don't. How could we? We're all so different. While we don't come with an owner's manual, we do come with a compass. That's exactly what Frankie found. But he found it the hard way. While following a way to stay out of pain, Frankie found himself in pain, the worst kind of pain, and he had to find a way out. Well, he did. Frankie not only found a way out of chronic, persistent pain for himself, but thousands of others. But while looking for the way out of pain, he found something that not only takes us out of pain, not just getting us back to where we were, but allows us to progress perpetually. Frankie has taken these discoveries and made a science of them so that you can become better than ever once you learn to follow your body's biofeedback, your very own personal compass to guide you in living your best life. Now, Frankie teaches you about your compass in a lot of books, including Biofeedback Fat Loss, Beginning Biofeedback, The Progress Resolution, The Biofeedback Solution, Your Mind, the Owner's Manual, the Martial Arts Master Plan, as well as his courses for the fitness professional, Biomechanics 1, 2, and 3, and Biopsychology. So we're in for an in-depth, revealing, eye-opening interview here that's going to take us inside so that we can make a difference outside. Frankie Ferez has a website, which I'll talk about later, but if you want to write it down, it's www.ruthemovement.com. ruthemovement.com, and I'm going to center most of the interview around his one of the most recent books, The Progress Resolution, and that one would be at www.theprogressresolution.com. Frankie, thanks for making time.
Oh, thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, great. Well, let me start here with the beginning, because most people aren't going to know who you are out of my audience. I mean, you have a following, and you are doing a lot with martial arts and in the gym, the fitness world there, but my audience may not all know that. So when you get on an elevator, what's your elevator speech? How do you describe yourself?
Yeah, the 10 or 11 seconds to tell everyone exactly what you're about. Yeah.
Or are you the guy that just stares at his shoes and waits for the elevator to go up?
Right. That's not easy. But I would say for me, that I teach people to follow what's inside of them. You said it better than what I did. What did you say, Joe? You said something about taking what's inside of them to
something make a change on the outside.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, that was wonderful, Joe. That was wonderful. So I'm totally gonna steal that.
Good.
But it is what it is. It's aligning how we act with how we feel. A lot of people are taught, unfortunately, at a very young age, that how they feel doesn't matter and that they should behave in this way. And what we teach is something entirely different, that we, in fact, should act in accordance with our feelings and that our feelings guide our actions. And I know, Joe, you're a big action guy.
I am, yes. Well, this is an interesting thing, and that's why I want you on this call, because we live in this world where there's, I'm going to oversimplify it to try to get to a point, where there's at least one side of the world who wants to follow their feelings. Then there's the other side of the world that says, screw your feelings, run them down with your intent, your willpower, your mind power, and your whatever else you want to add to it. And I know you know what I'm talking about, because in the gym world alone, you've got the one side that are more feeling oriented. They're going to pay attention to their body. But there's a whole other very aggressive side that says, no, I'm not going to listen to my body. I'm going to keep pushing. And yeah. Both of them will tend to get results, some of them more painfully than others.
Yes.
And this fascinates me because, as you probably know, I'm in the strongman world now, and Iron Tamer Dave Whitley has been here, and I've met Adam Glass, who's one of the biggest proponents and teachers of what you do. And
right.
I've studied with Dennis Rogers. And so there's I'm wrestling with this a little bit. I've trained with Bill Phillips. I met Lou Ferrigno. I've seen that whole world of aggressiveness and pushing beyond your limits to get somewhere. And now I'm seeing you with your books, and especially with Adam Glass, who seems to be a type of Superman, doing all kind of apparently impossible feats, but doing them with the greatest ease.
That's right.
I'm not even sure what I'm asking yet, but I'm trying to paint a picture of a clash.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, you're talking about two camps, these people who live in their feelings and they never really do anything, and then this other camp that don't care about how they feel, don't care about how you feel. This is what you got to do. This is what you got to be. Ignore everything else. And I've found that when you integrate the two, you get far better results. Now, here's the thing, Joe. You're not Adam. You're not Iron Tamer. I'm not you. We can't all be the same, yet there's so many schools of thought that seek to make us all the same, to make us homogenous. What this is about is, this is, you know, if you want to talk fitness, right, this isn't about everyone having, you know, a 500-pound deadlifter like you being able to bend that horseshoe. I don't bend horseshoes, Joe. Now, it's not because I'm weak. It's just because that's not mine to do. And what I teach makes you more of yourself.
And that's one of the things that's drawn me to you. I think I've read all of the books you have out there now. And I don't remember which one it was in, but there was towards the end of one of the books you're talking about, what if Mother Teresa had focused her life on having six-pack abs and a bikini
right.
body rather than saving as many people as she could. And
right.
you had a whole list of examples like that. And it really made me stop and think that, wait a minute, I personally, my mission in life is to inspire people through my writing, my teaching, my music, all those things. I don't feel my mission in life is to inspire people through bending horseshoes or having a car back over me like some of the strongmen do.
Right.
And Godspeed right. for them to go and do it. I will be inspired to some level by what they're doing, but that's for them to do. That's not for me to do.
Right.
And that was one of the insights I was getting from you. It was very freeing.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing is, Joe, is we all want to be something other than ourselves because we think there's something wrong with ourselves.
Mm.
And I'm here to tell you, nothing wrong with you. The only thing wrong is when you try to be something other than yourself. And, you know, there's a lot of platitudes and a lot of, you know, short aphorisms. Be yourself. But what's beautiful about this is there's a science to it. There's an actual practice to it. And when you do that, your life gets better than ever.
And that's what I want to hear more about. I want to know what this science is, and I want people that are listening to be able to use it to whatever degree we can teach it within an hour and over the phone and make it as practical as possible right now. I want to know it. They want to know it. Where do we begin?
Okay. We begin probably the exact same place where you begin, Joe, and that's with the collection of information. I bet you have an impressive library at your house, don't you?
I do, all over. I'm surrounded by books, and, yeah, I'm a bookaholic.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, and information is great, but here's what it's not. It's not a set of commandments, all right? Every book you have is not more commandments for you to do. What they are is they're a set of experiments. Hey, try this. See if it works for you. And guess what? It's perfectly okay if something that works for me doesn't work for you. Move on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really that simple. Now, here's something I don't have a better term for it, and you know, it's not good hearing a scientist necessarily say magical, but it's the closest thing to magic I've seen, is when you do what's good for you, you get more sensitive, you get more intuitive, you get more predictive. And when you start acting on those sensations, those predictions, you get more surgical in your action. You get more active. It's this beautiful loop that feeds back in on itself. That when you start being yourself, you get better at being yourself. You get better at sensing through yourself and acting through yourself. And it's not any harder than that.
It's fascinating, and I know what you're talking about because I read your books, but I'm not sure everybody else listening is going to know, because we've heard the phrases like, be yourself. I mean, I heard that when I was a kid, be yourself, and I'm like, well, who the hell is that? I'm still trying to figure out who I am.
Right.
You know, and even now in my 60s, when people say be yourself, or I hear that, or I even say that, I'm not sure that it communicates exactly what we're trying to communicate. I'm not sure it means everything to everybody.
Okay. Let's take that. And I love what you're doing, because I really want you to hold my feet to the fire and make sure that we get this information out to your audience. So we're going to start with the simplest thing that we all encountered as kids, and that is food. Now, we all have things we like and we don't like, and most of us don't have an explanation for that. So, Joe, tell me an example of a food that's supposed to be good for you that you just don't like.
Green peppers, broccoli, green peas, green beans.
Perfect. Yeah. All right. Now, Joe, what happens if you have a little bit of that? You put that in your mouth. Do you want to swallow it? What do you want to do with it?
Well, I want to spit it out.
Exactly right. And that is a bodily function. That is a low level of vomiting or regurgitation, because that is more than likely not good for your body. And if you force that down, you're going to have an even worse bodily response. And if you don't believe me, Joe, I challenge you to try it right, you know, for your lunch meal right after we get on the phone. See
yeah,
what
thanks.
Happens. Right? I can't. Tons of food that I can't stand. But when I eat those things that I crave and I pay attention, and Joe, is it okay for people to crave whatever they crave? Is it okay for people to eat whatever they eat?
Well, it depends on who you ask. There's a...
That's exactly
yeah.
Right.
You know as well, there's a whole group of people. You can find anybody to endorse anything. We live in this world where if you want to eat broccoli, you can find people who will say it's good for you. If you don't want to eat broccoli, you can find studies of some sort or another with enough research to say, oh, you shouldn't eat that. You're sensitive to it.
Joe, but here's the thing. You just said something very interesting.
Tell me.
You can find a study that will tell you to do it. Well, here's the thing. You're never going to find a study to where 100% of the people used has a positive or negative response to whatever it is they're testing. You can't. It's never happened. Won't happen. If the sample size is big enough, it won't happen. That's because we're all so different. And so what are you going to listen to? You're going to listen to someone else's body? You're going to listen to someone else's mind? Or are you going to listen to yourself? I mean, we are the most sophisticated, complex machine on the planet, and you have all of these things connected to yourself to guide you. And I'm saying, why not just follow that? See what happens. And, you know, we have thousands of people, anecdotally, of course, to whenever they start listening to themselves, they start feeling better. And when they start feeling better, they start doing more. Now, we also have some people who, you know, one of your teachers, David Whitley, Iron Tamer, he didn't buy into what we were doing right away, right? But then once he started it, you know, and you know what you were saying, the Amor Fati, you know, what if Mother Teresa had tried to have a six-pack out and all that? That's what got him too. Once he read that, it's like, okay, I'm in. Now it's okay to be me.
Mm. Right. And this is all fascinating, and I'm going to call you on a couple of things. First of all,
sure.
it was Iron Tamer David Whitley who taught me the basics of what
right.
you are teaching, and I think he learned it from Adam Glass, who's out there
right.
doing it in a big way. I don't know Adam well. I've only met him for now, but I do plan to know more and spend some time with him. Okay, so you kind of opened a can of worms, though, because you went with the food-oriented thing and trusting
sure.
your cravings. So if I say I don't like green peppers and I'm not going to choose to eat them because that's what my body's telling me, and what do I want to eat? Well, pizza comes to mind. So here I am. I now have a conflict within me, because if I want to lose weight and be in shape and feel good and so forth, I'm going to give up my broccoli and I'm going to eat pizza. Well, that, I think
well,
most
hold,
people
hold,
would... Yeah, go ahead.
Hold on. Hold
yeah.
on. Hold on. Now, are you saying you're going to eat pizza every meal, every day, every week for the rest of your life?
No. Probably every day and every meal for a week.
Well,
you know,
and we both know,
at some point I'll get sick of it.
That's exactly right. Now, why? Why do you get sick of it? What is telling you you're sick of it? What is telling you you need something else?
I'll get sick of it. Well, my body, to answer the question, my body would.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
So how do we tune into our body to get these signals? So if I'm going to go and have lunch after this, what would be a way to ask my body, what do you want?
Well, how have you picked out every meal you've ever had when you followed your body? It just tells you, doesn't it? Just like the chair, you may be sitting in your chair right now. How did you select that chair? The clothes you're wearing, how did you select those clothes? We're taking something that you know, at its face seems incredibly complex, and it's like, oh, that's not complex at all. I'm making these so-called decisions all the time. I'm just telling you, it's okay to do it.
And I love this, but I'm going to wrestle with you a little bit, because I want clarity on this for me as well as for everybody that is listening or will be listening. And that's the idea of there's self-deception, there's self-sabotage, there's in some schools that do kinesiology and muscle testing and all that, they talk about reversals. How do you get a clear answer from your body rather than what could some might say, oh, you want to eat ice cream, not because it's a clear answer from your body, it's that you mentally are addicted to ice cream or dairy, and that's why you want it.
That's exactly right. Okay, so it's my hypothesis that people are really bad at following their body because they don't do it. They simply don't practice it. And, of course, whenever you first start doing something, you're not going to be very good at it, right? We have a saying, first rep's the worst rep, right? From at the very beginning of our life, and there's a reason why I brought up that food thing, Joe, eat your green beans, eat your green peppers, they're good for you. Joe, ignore what your body's telling you, listen to what I'm telling you. And that happens over and over and over again. Joe, I know you don't want to read Dickens, but it's good for you, read it. Joe, I know you're not good at math, but you need to do it. We have these authority figures in our lives over and over and over telling us, and they're not meaning to, telling us, I know better than you do, instead of teaching you, hey, Joe, what do you want to read? Hey, Joe, what do you want to eat? Hey, Joe, how do you want to be active today? And here's the thing. It's going to be a little different every time because Joe's a little different every time.
Okay, I'm loving it, and I'm listening to you, and I want to see if I can tie it into something. Well, I'm going to read a quote here. In your book, The Progress Resolution, you talk about the secret, and I'm going to read the two lines or two paragraphs. They're very short. Years back, The Secret, with the movie, The Secret rose to popularity as a movie and book of the same name. The author portrayed The Secret to be the law of attraction. Whatever we can focus most on, we will somehow manifest in our lives. Where we place our attention or what our focal point is matters. but I'm betting you haven't found it to be the critical piece in achievement. It wasn't the whole secret. The secret is more than that. The secret is in finding what you can do. And once you find what you can do and what is good for you to do, you'll shortly be able to do what you can't do and what you want to do. Now, I find that absolutely fascinating. And when I read your book, The Progress Resolution, I told you you need to write a mass market book called What's Your 1%? Because the essence of the Progress Resolution, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is about finding the 1% that you can do well, and doing it, and in doing it, you will continue to expand.
Yes.
Maybe you can explain that better, because I know I'm diving in trying to...
No. And you know what? I think we're both coming up against this. This is such a simple concept, but it's so antithetical to what we believe and practice, it makes it hard to explain.
Yes, that's right.
Right. Almost like a Westerner trying to understand an Eastern line of thought. And you know, Joe, when I was writing that, I got to be honest with you, I didn't imagine that you would ever be reading that. But what's so interesting about that is you very well could have written most of that quote, because that's exactly what you teach, right?
Yeah.
With the traction has to come action. And the only kind of fine point I find on it is, okay, yeah, we need action, but not all of us can do the same level of action, right? Some of us are capable of, what is it Tony Robbins says, massive action or something like that, take massive action, right? Some of us just can't take massive action right now, right? And so for a lot of us, that brings about a lot of shame or a lot of embarrassment. And then we just feel bad about not being able to do as much as others or not being able to do more. What I'm saying is just simply point your mind to what you can do. And in doing what you can do, you're practicing doing. And in practicing doing, you're getting better at doing, and you'll be able to do more. And that's what that 1% is about. You know, it's if we could just find that smallest, you know, 1% is just a metaphor. It just points us towards small action. You know, it's this tale has already been told by Aesop, right? It's the tortoise and the hare. The hare is that massive action. And I'm saying it's okay to not all of us are hares, right? Not all of us are those fast rabbits. But just about everyone can be that slow tortoise that can find that little something to do every day. And that's really what the 1% is about. Find what you can do and do it.
Find what you can do and do it. So I want to bring this home again and bring it to life for folks. If somebody, we were talking about books earlier, and I'm a book nerd. So if somebody wanted to write a book, and it's their very first book, they have the desire, they have the goal, the intention, the passion is there, but they've never done it before. What would be an example of a 1% in the right direction to write a book?
Right. Now, I've written a few books, Joe. You've written a lot more than I do, so you might be better qualified to lead people in this direction. But I have the thing is, you take a very big thing and you break it down. It's really that simple. And then from whatever level it is you're able to break down, just see which in those directions you could do. So here's an example. For me, I may start off with, what is it that I want to leave people with having read this book? And I might write that down. And then it might be, well, how do I want to start this book? How do I want to introduce this book? And then later, the idea might come for me to outline it. Oh, I think the book's kind of going to go in this progression. Then I may look at my outline and say, okay, maybe I can write on this section today. And then maybe once I've done a little writing, then it's like, well, maybe I could edit this section today. Or if I don't feel like writing today, maybe I could look at cover art. Or maybe I could read someone else that inspires me to write. It's everything that's sort of peripherally related to that end point of having a book. Do that.
I love it. So a couple questions. Yeah. First of all, it sounds really easy. there's an effortless flowing way to the approach that you just explained, and I love that. That sounds like, boy, that would take a whole lot of pressure off of people. Instead of thinking, I got to write the book all in one sitting or in 1 week, I'm going to wake up every day and I'm going to have ask myself, what does it feel right for me to do today? That's in the direction of the book. But before that, there seems to be, or there must be, an intention.
Yes.
In other words, in order for us to ask our body or ask our mind or ask anything, what we're going to do today, before that, there must have been an intention that I'm going to write a book. So when it comes to setting the intention before they want to actually do anything, what is your guidance there? What would be your advice?
All right. Now, hey, Joe, I know you said we were going to get deep, so I'm gonna try to get a little deep here.
Okay? Let's do it.
All right. So I can't tell you about the origin of the intention, but I can tell you a part of the intention. And part of where the intention came from was your body.
Mm.
Now, right? It's a part of it. It's at least a conduit, right? It's at least a tool. It's at least, you know, the thing that's going to enact it, the thing that's going to channel it, the thing that's going to make it happen. And so here's the only thing that can be a little tricky about intentions, and here's how I like to turn it on its head. Instead of saying, I am going to write today, or I am going to do this today, instead of that, I prefer to ask a question, right? Because how do you feel when you set an intention and it doesn't happen, right? I'm going to do this now, and then you don't do it. Most people feel pretty bad about it. And here's the thing. I don't think you failed at action. I think you failed at prediction. Because what you did is you just called it wrong. You said you were going to write today and it didn't happen. It's not because you were weak or unable or any of those things. It's just you called it wrong. You thought you were going to be able to and you didn't. So I like to approach the body not with intentions as much as questions. Here's the thing, Joe. I would like it every day if I could so-call eat clean or exercise a lot or be really productive. But I don't run my body as much as my body runs me.
Mm.
And the best way I can help my body is by simply conferring with it. If it's going to be my guide, then let it guide me. Body, what can I do right now? What can I do right now? Now that I did this, what can I do right now? I don't have, if I'm really letting it be my guide, after I get off this phone with you, I don't have a set-in-stone plan, unless there are things that I absolutely have to do. Otherwise, it's what would be best for me to do next.
Mm.
What would be best for me to do next? Are you kind of getting what I'm saying?
Absolutely. So it raises another question. When you are listening to your body, what exactly are we listening to?
We are, okay, so here's the thing. Let's go back to the food, and I know it's kind of, mm-hmm. you know, kind of a... you know, a little bit of a challenge here. But you talked about pizza.
Yes.
Okay? Right. I like pizza too, Joe. I just had pizza 2 days ago. I was driving through Whole Foods and I had a slice of pepperoni pizza. So when you think about pizza, okay, so let me ask you this, Joe. Do you want ham and pineapple pizza?
No.
How did you know that, Joe? How did you know that? That's amazing. How did you know that? But the answer to your question, or the answer to the question I asked you, is exactly how we know what we want. Our body, you know, and this is a little bit of speculation, but or a little bit of a metaphor here, but your body pulls up, you know what ham tastes like. You know what pineapple tastes like. You know what pizza tastes like. You put it all together. No, I don't want that because you are having basically a little taste of that right now, right? And that doesn't make you feel like you want to feel. That action doesn't make you feel like you want to feel.
I love this. Now, in some schools of psychology, they think or state that the body is the unconscious mind. So in other words, our brain is up in our head, But our mind isn't necessarily in our head. Our mind could be throughout our entire body.
Yeah.
When I ask my body, do I want ham and whatever you said, pineapple pizza,
right,
and I got an immediate no, I'm conjuring up all those memories, which some people would say, that's not in your body, that's in your brain. Or somebody else would say, that's actually in your mind, and your mind is throughout your body. What is your stance on that?
Oh, that's an easy stance. Here's the thing. The nervous system is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. The brain is just a part of it, right? We have, you know, this idea of, you know, it's kind of a second brain in our gut, and maybe even a third brain sort of around our heart, all kinds of cool stuff. But the thing is we have sensors everywhere. Our nervous system is distributed. Our brain is just a part of our nervous system. And our mind is a metaphor for how we consciously experience ourselves, right? And so it is wildly inaccurate to say that your mind is just your brain. Your brain is indirectly connected to the rest of you, just like everything in the body is connected to everything else. And not only connected to itself, but connected to other things outside of it.
I'm glad I asked.
Oh, yes.
Great. I am. So let me give you a personal example of what I've done with your, what I've been learning from you, and what I learned firsthand from Iron Tamer, David.
David, tell me.
Okay, so he gives me a crash course in your teachings. When he was here and visited my gym and so forth. So it was a crash course, so it's like 2 hours long. And he's really detailed and he's very articulate. And the bottom line is I'm going to test myself before I do any of my next exercises. And I'll pick one as an example. So I'm learning to bend horseshoes, and I can bend them, which is thrilling. I'm not at the point where Iron Tamer can actually turn them into a knot. I can open them and straighten them, so I've got two levels of it there. So every day,
I'm going to interrupt you here for a second. What you do, not many people can do. That's very strong. So I just want your listeners to know that. And then of course Dave is way strong, and then Adam's way strong too, and Dennis, of course. Oh my God, these are at the top of those strength feats. So, yeah,
yes, thank you. You are absolutely correct. Yeah, I'm a babe in the woods here. So I'm learning how to do it, and I'm starting on the less dense horseshoes. But, you know, they're metal, and they're made for horses, so they're not easy to bend. So, but here's the point. I was trying a couple times a week just as part of my training. It's one of the things I learned from Dennis Rogers. Pick them up twice a week and go ahead and put it as part of your workout. Then I get David here, and he teaches me about testing this in what I think is called the movement. So I will look at my horseshoe. I will self-test. We'll talk about that in a second. And it will come back and say, no, don't even do it today. Don't even try. And I'll kind of go, oh, that's confusing. I'll shrug and let it go. I'm going to trust my body. Next day I go, and I think, okay, am I going to do the horseshoe? I test my body. It says no. And I go, all right, I don't know why, but I'm going to trust that. Third day, I go back, and I test, and it says, yeah, go ahead and do the horseshoe. I'm like, well, all right. And I open the horseshoe like it was butter.
Yep. Isn't that amazing?
It was, and I want to make sure people get this, wrestling with a horseshoe is hard work. It does take strength, it does take technique, and it does take willpower, mind power, endurance, and even some pain tolerance. And I was doing it with great struggle. Then I took, because my body told me so, 3 days off, or 2 days off, whatever it was. And then when it said, go ahead and do it now, I went, all right, picked it up, and there was almost no effort.
Right. I know.
Well, okay, I wanted to give the first hand example here so people have an image in their mind. How do we test our body?
Okay. So it goes back to that sensation and action, or feeling and bodily response. Were you using a range of motion test?
Yes. And I'll tell you real quick what it is, because he showed me two or three, and I know I have your books, and you have a lot of different ways to test. For me, I'm standing up, my hands are at my side, and I raise my right arm like I'm going to be turning myself into an airplane. I raise my right arm as if it's a wing to get a sense of my range of motion, and all I'm doing is waiting for the first sensation of any discomfort at all.
Right.
When I have it, I treat that as what I'm calling my baseline. Then I will ask myself, do I do the horseshoe, or I will pick up a horseshoe and just hold it for a second, put it down, and then ask my body, am I to open that horseshoe? If my arm goes up past where it just was when I got my base reading, I treat it as a yes.
Yep.
If it only goes as far as the base or doesn't even go that far, I go, oh, no, not today. That's the one test that I do the most, and I'm only saying it so I can explain it to people, and I do know you have other tests, and you may have preferences.
Right. No, oh, that, you know what, everyone just needs to find a test that works for them, and we can talk more about that later if you want, but sounds like you're doing perfectly, and I got to brag on Whitley here for a little bit.
Sure.
He is very, very smart, very strong. Mm-hmm. And a not only a great teacher, but a great student. And how many of those do we have? People who can not only embody it, who can not only do it, can not only teach it, but they can, you know, learn from others as well. So I think you were very fortunate to find Dave as a teacher.
And oh, yeah.
I was very, very fortunate to find Dave as a student. He's a great guy. So I can't recommend Dave enough. So we're going to start with the very simple premise.
Mm-hmm.
Everything makes you, Joe, better or worse. Everything. Having encountered something, having done something, having experienced something, you're left feeling either, you know, in total, better or worse. That's our first premise.
Okay.
Here's the second one. You can measure that.
Mm.
Now, let me tell you the first time, you know, you mentioned things like applied kinesiology or clinical kinesiology.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you the first time I encountered this idea of, or an example of how our memories or our thoughts or our experiences changes our body. And it of course, comes from someone that we have a lot of exposure to, Mr. Anthony Robbins,
mm-hmm.
and his courses. And, of course, I saw this on a video somewhere. He has people think about something basically good that happened to them, and then he has them turn or rotate and then see how far they can rotate. Or actually the first thing he does is he has them remember something bad that happens to them, right, and sees how far they can rotate, maybe by pointing a finger. And if you're listening at home right now and you're not driving, do this, okay? This is an experiment. Oh, I love experiments. So think about, just stand there, think about something bad that happened to you, something that you don't have trouble imagining, maybe even the worst thing that ever happened to you. And just take your right hand and keep your feet planted, and then just, while holding that in your mind, see how far you can turn. And then, you know, stop, shake out, whatever you need to do. Now I want you to think about maybe the best thing that ever happened to you. Keep those feet planted and turn. And what you're going to find is that, wow, you get a lot more range of motion when you think about something good that happened to you versus something bad that happened to you. And it works much the same way with everything that happens to you instantly. It instantly takes things away from you, like strength or speed or flexibility, or it may give it to you. Once again, you may get stronger, you may get faster, you may get more range of motion. That's the way the body works. That's just the way it does. And we can get into a scientific breakdown of that, but usually most people don't find it necessary. If you did something, and then if you felt better because of it, you would continue doing it. And that's the way organisms have acted since, you know, the beginning of chemistry in organisms. They go towards things that make them feel better. and they go away from things and make them feel worse. And that's how our body protects us. That's how our body keeps us alive. And we're just making use of that process whenever we're selecting the things we should do, not just in the gym, but everywhere.
Yes, and that's one of the things, too, that if we have time I want to talk about, because it's not just in the gym. The testing is for everything, everyone, every place, depending on whatever you're doing. But since we've talked about the gym a few times, let's look at that for another minute. You have a lot of experience in the gym, and you're in martial arts, too, as I understand it. You sent me a book about that. Okay, so I walk into the gym tomorrow morning, and I could test so many. Where do you even begin? I can walk in the gym, and I have so many. You can ask Dave. I have so many exercises. Yeah, go ahead.
Hold on. Here's how we start, Joe.
Yeah.
What do you feel like? What do you feel like doing?
Well, what if I said
nothing? What do you feel like doing? Then don't go to the gym. You mean that the only thing you can do for yourself to make yourself better is to go to the gym? Come on, that's just a small part of life. And while I think, and you know what, here's the thing, gym's not for everyone. Here's what is for everyone, movement, activity. Go gardening, go hiking, whatever it is you do. There's nothing magical that happens in the gym unless the gym is magic for you.
That's
now, I know,
statement.
Right? I know that it is for you, Joe. I know that it is for you. You didn't happen onto this idea of bending horseshoes. Didn't you tell a story? I'm trying to remember, Joe. How did you come across Dennis Rogers? Was it TV, or did you see him in person, or what was it?
He actually lived in my city 6 years ago. I lived out in the country, and he had moved here. And a mutual friend, John Wood, does the strength training too? John introduced or told Dennis to meet me and me to meet him. And I met Dennis 6 years ago, and he bent a wrench for me, which I still have on our dining room table. We use it as a pen holder, and I never forgot it.
Right.
I never forgot it.
And when you saw that, when you were there, when you experienced it, when you felt it, something about that experience told you, I want to do that.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Yes, and here's the thing. I mean, how many people have seen Dennis? Millions? I've seen Dennis. But when I saw Dennis, I didn't say, I got to bend a wrench, I got to bend a horseshoe. because I'm not Joe, I'm Frankie, right? Mm. But when I see people do martial arts, that turns on something in me that bending in a horseshoe just doesn't. And that's okay. But here's the thing, Joe, I would love to see you bend something because I love seeing people do what is theirs to do. There's nothing more beautiful than that, and nothing more horrible than seeing someone attempt to do what's not theirs to do. It's just it's tragic. I hate that.
I would love this attitude. I love this freeing way of looking at life. And now I'm thinking about kids and teenagers maybe. I've got nephews and nieces and all of that. And the ones who are going to gym class when they don't want to, or the ones who are thinking, well, I got to go into martial arts because my dad did. How do we help people find their way? Or find their, we mentioned this is a compass. How do we return them to the compass when they're being bombarded by programs, books, media, the internet, coaches, teachers, well-meaning friends? How do we point back to their internal compass?
Well, with a question, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? And here's the thing, you know, when we first, like I said before, when we first start this, we don't always get it right, right? but then when we start to do it, it's like, oh, it's not for me. And you know what? We belittle kids. We berate them when they start something and they don't finish it. Oh, they're supposed to come out of the womb fully formed, knowing exactly what's theirs to do? No. Once again, we're not given an owner's manual. We're given a compass. And so it's like, so Joe, you're a musician, right? What instruments have you played? I know you're a guitarist, right?
Yeah, guitar, saxophone, and harmonica.
Okay. Have you ever started an instrument and then found that, man, this is not really my thing?
Sure.
Okay, give me an example. What was something?
Accordion.
Accordion, right. Well, accordion is not for everybody. It's not for most people. But what if you said, oh, I did the accordion, and, well, then music just isn't for me? Then we wouldn't have you playing the harmonica or playing the saxophone or playing the guitar. So when we have kids who are drawn in a certain direction, right, but then maybe it's like, well, I don't really like playing the violin. Well, you still like music, right? Well, let's try something else. Allow them to be wrong. Joe, I'm wrong all the time. What about you?
Did you say you're wrong all the time?
I'm wrong, not all the time, but I mean, I'm wrong every day. I make mistakes every day. But the thing is in making mistakes, I figure out a little bit more about myself. Mm. It's like, oh, maybe you know, it's right direction, but wrong, you know, wrong modality. Mm-hmm. You know, once again, right music, wrong instrument. And so expect that. Expect there to be a refining, right? I'm sure as you've gotten older, you've gotten more laser-like focused in who you are and who you're going to help and how you're going to do it.
And that is true. Yes, it's been fine-tuned. I'm still expanding, much
yes.
like a few, you know, I didn't do the strength training a few years ago, but it was on the back burner. It's like, if there was a way for me to learn it, I'll do it. And a few months ago, there was a way for me to learn it, and I grabbed it, and I haven't looked back. So let me make sure we cover a few things here, because we're covering so much, and I love where we're going. It's a very freeing approach. It's a very trust-oriented approach. It's a very growth-oriented approach. I know one thing. We were talking about the gym, and I want to make sure people realize this. One of the things Adam Glass says is that he can go into the gym, or wherever he goes, and gets a personal best.
Yes.
A personal best in every session.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. You want to talk about what a personal best or a personal
record? Yeah, define. Well, we should define personal best in case somebody doesn't know. And then, how is it possible to get a personal best in every session of training in anything?
Yeah, I know, because that isn't our experience. Otherwise, right?
Right.
Our experience is well, we just you know, every once in a while we get better. We just practice and we slog through the hard stuff, and most of the time, you know, it's kind of okay. Sometimes it's really bad, but every once in a while it's really good. Yes,
right.
That's our experience,
mm-hmm.
because for those experiences, we're not listening to ourselves, right? We're just saying, I've got to practice, I've got to make a habit, I've got to do it every day, blah, 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 right? And I like habits, I like rituals, but the habits I like and the rituals I like is the question, what would be good for me to do right now? And when you find what it is that is yours to do, don't be surprised if you can do more than ever before. Now, here's what I mean by more than ever before. In the gym, it's mathematical. It's measurable. Right, and so there's all these metrics to it. You know, there's this idea of intensity or more weight than ever before. There's this idea of volume, more reps than ever before. There's this idea of density, doing that same amount of work but in less time. Then there's this idea of flexibility, or man, I can move through a greater range of motion than ever before. Now, whenever you come into the gym and you say, there's only one way to get better, then yeah, you're not going to get better in that way very often. And if you're always going in that one direction, you're not going to get very far. But Joe, you're not just a hypnotic marketer. You're not just a guitar player. You're not just a steel bender. You're not just a man. You are a multitude of things, right? And you can't get better in all those ways all the time. But if you just ask yourself, what way am I interested in going today? What am I passionate about today? Don't be surprised if you can do more than ever before in that direction.
So the key question seems to be, what would be good for me to do right now?
Yes. Yes. So simple, right? So simple. But how different is that than what we do otherwise. Most of us don't even ask ourselves a question. We come to ourselves with a command. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Doesn't matter how I feel, I'm going to do this. Like you're a slave driver.
And you're treating yourself as a slave.
Yes, yes. You're sacrificing yourself on the altar of yourself. It's a horrible, horrible cycle.
So the question, what would be good for me to do right now? I love that, and I'm trying to imagine if somebody wakes up in the morning, or even if they get off this call, they get off this this interview, and they're looking around going, okay, what would be good for me to do right now? And they sit there blankly. Is there, because there may be too many opportunities or too many choices or so many things that they want to do that they can't hone in on it. What's a way to get that answer?
Okay, so I'm a big fan of whiteboards, and I'm going to give you a personal example. Mm-hmm. So every day there are things that I have to do, right? But not every bit of my time is taken up with things I have to do. I have some so-called free time to do things I want to do. Okay? So right now, do I want to read? Yes or no? Would that make me feel better to read? Nah, not so much. Okay. Should I write? Maybe. Okay, well, what do I want to write? Do I want to write I've got a series right now that I've been working on, Men Who Matter in My Life. Do I want to write about that? Not so much. Do I want to write about martial arts right now? Not so much. Oh, do I want to continue to write on this series right now I'm writing on effective discipline? Yeah, I think I want to write on that. Okay, so I'm going to go do that. It's this narrowing down. Here's all the things that I'm usually interested in doing. Do I want to do that? 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 And it's what I'm doing is I'm sensitizing myself. I'm making myself more aware of myself. And that's it. It's a very simple practice, but oh, so profound.
Well, I love it because it's helping people really go within, become incredibly sensitive to their own feelings, all of the intuitions, the inspirations, everything that would be coming through the body, that would be coming inside, you become very sensitive to it. It's also bringing people more into the moment, which
yes.
From a spiritual standpoint is so enlightening because, you know, past is gone, future isn't here, all we have is the moment.
Right.
Do you do the range of motion testing on those kind of questions you were just asking, like, what would be good for me to do right now? Do I write this book? Do I write this blog post? Or do you do physical testing on that?
Absolutely, especially if you don't know how you feel. But here's the thing. Because what that's doing is it's showing you how it's affecting your body. Oh, that's giving my body more range of motion. That's usually a good thing. That usually feels good. But testing is meant to inform your intuition, not replace it. This is meant to reconnect you to your body so that you can better use your body to navigate your life. That's it.
And can you give us an example of a range of motion test just so people have a visual besides the one I gave?
Okay, sure. So the first one I already gave is the idea of you know, Tony was using of, you know, just standing and rotating to the right or to the left, pointing a finger. That's an example. There's no one range of motion necessarily any better than another. The only thing that determines that, here's one of my statements, and maybe there's a more better way to put it, and you translate this however you need to. Better is not a stimulus, it's a response. There's nothing that's inherently good or bad. What makes it good or bad is how you respond to it. That's it. That's the directive. And so just simply pay attention to how things affect you and act in accordance with that. And you were right. You were talking about, yes, it's putting us in the moment. It's connecting us with our feelings so that we know how to act and then act. And then you get even greater intuition and greater inspiration and greater ability to act.
Boy, I love all of this, Frankie. I can be talking to you for a long time. What do you call what you do? or what you teach? What would you call all of this whole conversation? What would you call this?
I know. It needs a good name, doesn't it?
It does.
Because I come from kind of a scientific background, I use biofeedback, and I use that in a different way than how people think about biofeedback. That's because the other term is used incorrectly. You know, whenever people think about biofeedback, you know, oh, I'm connecting to a computer, I'm looking at a screen, and I'm trying to make something on the screen go up or down, right? But bio refers to life. And then feedback is basically how one thing affects the other. Your actions affect your feelings affect your actions. And so I'm not too attached to how, to whatever it's called, but how I've, for my audience, the thing that seems to work for them is when I say, this is what biofeedback is. Mm. But whatever it needs to be called, it'll be called.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be open to another name for you, because when I first heard the biofeedback, well, my mind went all in a completely different direction. It was all the stuff I had read about biofeedback and the little equipment things that they put you strap to your brain and trying to get you to pay attention to your body through technology.
Right.
That's what I was thinking of. And you're not essentially coming from there. This is really self-contained, which is what it needs to be, because you're listening to yourself. So your website is...
So you have all the technology you need. You are far more advanced than any computer, and here we are. We're basically, you know, attaching ourselves to something Stone Age as compared to what you have inside of you. You are far more advanced, far more complex, far more intelligent than anything else we have, at least yet.
I love all of this, Frankie. I love what you're doing. I love your materials, your books. Your main website is www.ruthemovement.com. And the book, I think, is the one I would recommend people start with, is theprogressresolution.com. But do you have a preference? Do you want people to start with a particular book? Do you think there's a beginner's approach, or get the beginning biofeedback book, or what would you recommend?
You know, I think people should just go look at it, and if it doesn't interest them, don't get it. Go to RU the Movement, go to shop, and then look through those little... explanations of what's going to be in there. And if you're in pain right now, check out the pain prescription. If you think it would be best for you to be a little bit leaner, check out biofeedback fat loss. If you're interested in applying biofeedback to all of your life, check out beginning biofeedback. So take a personalized approach, because guess what? You're a person. You're a unique individual. I want you to be that.
So in other words, go to ruthemovement.com /shop, and then trust your body to help direct you, if it's so inclined, to one of the or more of the books.
Or none. That's fine, too.
Or none, yes. Okay, before we leave, is there anything that I've missed that's absolutely essential that you kept thinking, oh, I wish Joe would ask this, I wish he would ask this?
No.
Is there something...
No, Joe, I think you did amazing, man. I really appreciate the opportunity. And if any of your audience listeners needs any further guidance, you know, feel free to contact me at Frankie Farris, FrankieFaires, at mac.com, and I'll try to help you.
Oh, that's very, very kind of you. Final question. Is there a question you wished I had asked you?
You know what? I'm going to disclose something I don't disclose I don't disclose it very often. I don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I have autism.
Mm-hmm.
Not as bad as the Rain Man kind, but it's not a great thing. Not a deficit. It is a it's like kryptonite. But in following my own biofeedback, I can do things that a lot of people thought wasn't possible. And so I know that people have limitations in their life. I know people have deficits in their life. I know that not everyone was born on third base. But if you will just start where you are, act in accordance with how you feel, no matter how embarrassing or shameful you may think it is, just do what you can do, I think people will get further than they ever thought imaginable.
Oh, that is so beautiful. thank you for being so open, so direct, so honest, so transparent. Frankie, you're a peach. You're doing great things in the world. I'm very honored that you made time to talk to me. Keep writing, because I love reading your books, and I hope to meet you soon. One day
soon. I hope to do that as well, Joe. Thank you so much.
That was Frankie Ferez. Go to his website, www.ruthemovement.com. He wrote a lot of books, Biofeedback, Fat Loss, Beginning Biofeedback, The Progress Resolution, The Biofeedback Solution, Your Mind, The Owner's Manual, The Martial Arts Master Plan. And he's got a lot of things for fitness professionals, biomechanics 1, 2, and 3, biopsychology. Go to ruthemovement.com. Meanwhile, Joe Vitale saying, have an awesome day and expect miracles.